This is Educating Tech, a podcast about using technology in our schools. I am your host, Matthew Lanier, and I'm here with Chris Fikes. How are you, Chris?
Good, after the fiasco I just went through.
You just spilled coffee on your desk, I'm sure that's...
No. Hold on, just so everybody knows, I spilled an entire cup. Not like one cup, you know, like the big button on a Keurig. Entire one of those on my computer for the second time this week.
Seems like it's been a great week.
Yes.
We're going to get to it a little bit later, but it really hasn't been a great week this week for education. But I want to start off by just mentioning that Disney Plus is out. I've watched The Mandalorian. It's amazing. And if you are a Verizon customer, they're unlimited plans. If you're not on the school unlimited plan, the unlimited plans will actually give you a free year of Disney Plus if that is something you're interested in. If any of our listeners are in a country that they do not have Disney Plus yet, I hope you get it soon because I like it. It's got Boy Meets World on it. You tried it out. You didn't really care for it, though, didn't you?
No, I already canceled our trial.
You didn't even last the whole 7 days?
No.
That's crazy. But, yeah. Caden likes it. My little boy likes it. He's watching a lot of the Cars shorts. With Mater and Lightning McQueen, I guess. And the old DuckTales. He likes the old DuckTales.
I like the old DuckTales.
So, I was scrolling through it, and I was like, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, that was so good back in the day. Oh, I want to go back and watch that. So, I mean, it's just like, we canceled Netflix because of this.
Well, we'll be doing that too.
I mean, because a lot of what Caden watched on Netflix was Disney stuff. And, well, it's all going to get eventually pulled off of Netflix and moved over to Disney Plus if it hasn't already.
I think September 2021 was the date that I saw all Disney would be gone everywhere else.
So, yeah. And so I figured this is half the price of Netflix, and it's given him... He was really the only one that watched Netflix. Me and Amanda, we really didn't watch it all that much. I watched a show here or there, and the ones that... I do watch now. They're going to be having their last seasons, and so they won't be making anymore. And so there's no sense. I'll just borrow my brother's Netflix account or something in order to watch those shows for the last time.
Shh, you can't say that. Yeah, they're cracking down on it now.
Yeah, whatever. And so I'll watch those, and I'll just essentially be done with it. And, you know, to be honest, I haven't missed it at all since we canceled it. We haven't had it for about a month, and it's been fine. But we'll fill that void with Disney Plus, and it's a lot more stuff that I like and he likes, because I like the Star Wars stuff and the Marvel stuff, and he likes Mickey Mouse and Pixar. So,
see, my kids, they like PBS Kids. So my daughter, she is a huge fan of Odd Squad, and my son likes Pinkalicious, and which is actually kind of funny. It's Pinkalicious and Peterrific.
Oh, well, that's good.
It's called Pinkalicious. It's kind of funny that he likes that one. And, of course, he loves Odd Squad, too. Odd Squad's just weird, funny learning stuff.
Caden watches a lot of PBS Kids, too. He's always loved Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood, which, I mean, I grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And so it's kind of nice for him to kind of watch things that are based on characters that I used to watch, so. I need to get him to watch Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, and then my world would be complete, because I just love that cartoon back in the day.
Now, my wife was making fun of me for singing the old theme songs, like when I broke out some Darkwing Duck. She was like, "What in the world are you doing?"
So great. Tailspin, Darkwing Duck, Gummy Bears. I mean, it's all those. What was it? Oh, man. They called it something like Laughternoon or something like that, I think.
Oh, see, I never had cable, so I really don't know. So it was only what I came on after school on the 4612s here.
Yeah, so it was like we always watched something. It was great. But the other piece of news that I wanted to do is I'm building a computer, and it's not a Macintosh.
Finally!
It's not an Apple. On the heels of Apple releasing a new MacBook Pro that I just absolutely drooled over, I am going to build me a Windows gaming computer. So, there's that.
I like it. Did you see that case I sent you, though? It looks like the new Mac Pro.
I did see that from, Union or something, I think is what it was.
Yeah, it was some Kickstarter thing, but they're actually shipping already.
Yeah, I don't care about that. I bought the cheapest, ugliest case I could find. because I did not want colored lights. I did not want to clear sides. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know that it's there. I just want to play my game and play new games. I don't want to just, it's like I'm kind of getting back into this PC gaming a little bit, and some newer World War II based games are coming out, and I'd like to play those, and I can't because of what I have is just can't handle it. And so my lovely wife agreed to let me purchase a bunch of parts, and they will be coming in on Friday of this week, and I will put them all together, and hopefully it doesn't catch on fire. So there's
it won't catch. It won't catch on fire. It may go and let the smoke out. But
I'm actually looking forward to it. And now it's like I just keep checking the UPS tracking. And it's like as we record this, it's actually in Houston right now, and has been in Houston since last night. And I'm like, why can't you just come today?
Tell me it didn't get stuck in North Houston.
Oh, probably that's where it's at.
That could be a 3-month delay.
Oh, no.
it's still not scheduled. USPS, is it?
No, it's UPS.
Okay. So it's in Mesquite or something?
No, it's actually in Houston. It's at a rival scan in Houston sometime last night. And so I was thinking, well, they'll throw it on a truck, get it to Port Arthur, and I'll get it tomorrow. Nope. Looks like it's still coming Friday. Which, I mean, they probably have, like, priority stuff that's got to come first. And so... And then my stuff will come. And then I actually got a monitor, too. I'm not real sold on the monitor. I just bought something cheap and better than what I had to play games with. So I'll put a link to my Newegg wish list of everything that I purchased in the show notes. Please do not comment to me on Twitter about the garbage that I bought. I know that I skimped out on some things, and I could have got some
unimportant things.
This is my first build. It's an entry-level build. I just want to play a handful of games, and I think what I did will solve the problem of what I have.
Oh, yeah. Just so everybody knows, he did go AMD.
I did go AMD, mainly for the price. But also, I have started another Newegg wish list, which I will not share, but it's called Upgrades. So basically, right now it has like more RAM, a mechanical hard drive to put in it eventually. I'm looking into cooling systems because apparently that's a thing.
Some AIO so we can do some overclocking.
Yeah, I guess. And so, because to be completely honest with you, I'm not planning on doing any of that. I just want to plug it in, stock it, and just let it run because I'm too scared to do anything like that as far as overclocking and things like that. So we'll just pop it in there, see how it works, load Windows. I have made me a Windows boot USB. And I have made me a USB with all the drivers and software installs like Steam and Epic Games to get some. Because apparently I bought I got the Batman trilogy games for free at one point from Epic Games for something. And so I'll actually be able to play those. It's one of those things that's like, oh, yeah, I'll get it because it's free. Maybe one day I'll be able to play it. Well, I'll be able to play it now.
Now you can.
So I got a bunch of that stuff. I've made my chocolatey scripts. To install everything that I need to do with. I've decided that I'm going to go with Firefox as my default browser on that computer.
You should.
Instead of Chrome, or even the new Microsoft Edge Chromium Beta, which has got a fancy new icon. Kind of looks like a seashell.
I don't really like the icon.
But well, they're just trying to distance themselves from Edge. But that's neither here nor there.
I get it. I get it.
And so I've got my drives ready to go. I've got my stuff backed up from the current computer that I'm playing games on, so it shouldn't take me no time at all to get everything set up and working on this new machine. And I am, believe it or not, super excited about it. I bought a Windows computer, and I have not done that since 2002. To be completely honest with you, I haven't bought a computer since 2002. So, I mean, I've just used
work computers. You've always just kind of used what was...
Yeah, what was provided, or I just use a tablet or a phone, because just, or my wife had this old laptop that we used for a while, but this is like the first computer that I actually bought, and I'm going to put it together, and I've got to go to Home Depot and get some little zip ties, or I thought about doing Velcro. Nope, I don't know what I want to do.
Don't do zip ties, and all your cabling needs to run behind the motherboard tray.
Behind the motherboard tray. I don't know what that means, but I'll figure it out.
Yes, so... If you ever change your mind and have one of those clear sides, you don't see any cabling.
Oh, well, that's probably not good. Well, I mean, with this case, it will be fine. If I ever change cases, then I can just redo the wiring. I just basically want to make it where it doesn't touch a fan.
Just don't block your airflow either.
Don't block the airflow. And based on your recommendation, I actually bought some other fans to replace the case fans. Yes. I don't know if that's supposed to make it quieter. I hope it does.
Well, they'll push more air through.
I don't really want to hear it. If I could put the computer in the other room and just drill a hole through the wall for the monitor cable, I'd be fine with that too.
You can. The board you got has Thunderbolt support.
Hey, there we go. But yeah, I'll have a link to the show notes to all that kind of stuff. It was really fun putting that little project together. Really looking forward to building it. Maybe next week's show I'll have it built and we can kind of talk about that and see how that goes. Cool. It's kind of serving a twofold process because number one, I want to play computer games. And number two, we are looking at thinking about starting an esports thing here. We're like in very preliminary stages as far as like gathering information to see if it'll be even possible and the things we would need. And so obviously one of the things that you can do with an esports club is actually have them build a computer. So if I am going to sponsor something like that, I need to actually know how to build a computer. So it's actually going to serve a twofold process. So it is kind of work related. So I'll be, maybe I can write it off on taxes. Who knows? But yeah, so I got a computer. So let's jump over and talk about this new MacBook Pro, 16-inch, gorgeous. The butterfly keyboard is G-O-N-E. It is gone. They have finally gone back to a scissor switch keyboard. It's being compared to, and it's actually called the Magic Keyboard. So it's kind of like the Magic Keyboard that I have right here in front of me and that I use with my computer and a dock, which I like the Magic Keyboard. I think it types well. I'm not somebody who sits and types for hours and hours and hours writing long form blogs or newsletters or things like that. So I don't know how comfortable it is for people like that. But for a laptop keyboard, I think it would be amazing. It's got some new stuff in it. Obviously, it's faster. They put a 100-watt battery in it, which is basically as big as you can carry on an airplane legally. And so I guess there's that. They will not be able to increase the size of the battery unless the FAA changes their mind on things. They did a lot of cool stuff to this this MacBook Pro. It looks very, very interesting. And, you know, we just happen to be up for upgrades here at work, so who knows?
Hey, but I got you a 9020 here that runs Catalina just fine.
I know. I saw that. You sort of hackintoshed an old computer. That wonder where that computer came from. So that's very interesting. So I know you don't really care too much about the Macs. I'll just kind of read to you real quick, like the specs that come in like the base two models that you can get, and you can kind of tell me what you think. Obviously, it's got a 6-core i7 processor, I think, for the base model, and then a Radeon Pro 5300M with 4 gigs. 5300M. The Apple people are saying this is the latest from AMD, but I always know that's garbage because
and to be fair, that one is the latest.
It is the latest.
It's just that they released you ordered a 5700.
Oh, so I got something better.
Yes, a 5700, and then they released two OEM onlys, the 5500M, and then I guess Apple wanted something even lower spec than that. And they got a 5300M?
Well, the AMD 5300M is in the 6-core i7 processor, which is the base model. And the 5500M is in the 8-core i9 processor, which is like the second level that you can buy before you customize. So they did use the 5500M as well. But they probably went with the 5300, I guess, to save a little bit of money. Just a little bit.
I guess. We'll give it to them.
But, I mean, based on the specs, it looks amazing. They brought the escape key back for everybody that uses Vim, because apparently they like the escape key.
Yeah, I don't know how you use a terminal without escape key. I never did get that one.
So they kind of shrunk the touch bar a little bit, gave an escape key on one side and a touch ID on the other side. So I'm very pleased with this laptop. This is everything that I was waiting on for a new Mac laptop. I'm kind of needing one. Mine's getting kind of old and slow, mainly I think because of the Spectre fixes. I'm getting those processor reductions.
These didn't fix that.
Well, I know, but they'll still at least be faster than what I have. And like things are just kind of, I don't know if I just need to reformat and just start over or something, but things are just getting slow.
I'm trying to see on their site which hexa-core they're using. They don't really like to list the chip they're using, do they?
No, they don't. They just want you to think that it's the latest and greatest.
I don't think it is. Looking at the speeds. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, I always know that it's like, when we talk about that, Apple says that it's the latest from AMD as far as graphics go, but then I talk to you and it's like, well, that was the latest 2 months ago. I mean, it's
Be fair, this one is the absolute latest. It has only been released to OEMs right now. And there, for those that have kind of an NVIDIA perspective, since these are new model numbers, these are the 1660 and the 1660 Ti comparables.
I don't know what that means. So I guess it's good.
They're 1080p gaming cards is what they are.
They're decent. They'll power like two of the new HDR displays, the Pro XDR displays, I think, from Apple.
Just don't plan on doing anything fast with them at those resolutions.
Yeah. It's a pretty powerful little machine. I kind of like the size of it, 16-inch. They shrunk the bevels, and the actual like footprint of it actually grew a little bit. They redid the sound. You apparently have like 6-speaker array thing, and apparently studio quality microphones built into it. I'm interested to see how that works.
Yeah, I'm interested in that one too.
But it's like, it on paper, it looks like a great machine. The reviews of it seem to be very positive from what I can see.
That's cool.
And a lot of it has to do with the keyboard, because apparently people hated the butterfly keyboard.
I don't blame them.
I remember I went and tried it out at an Apple store, and I was like, this is miserable. I mean, this is absolutely terrible. I mean, I knew people when it first came out that they actually they kept buying the 2015 model of the MacBook Pro as opposed to the new one just because of the keyboard. And it's like they were just subject to failure and things like that. And so Apple tried 3 times to get it right, and it 3 times it didn't. So they'll just go back to what they did before that worked and didn't really have any problems. So,
and they're going to call it magic, so maybe you'll magically forget about that last iteration?
Yeah, exactly. So in the middle of all this press about these new MacBook Pros, my favorite Apple exec, Phil Schiller, decided to go to CNET, I believe, and he was talking about computers in classrooms, and so he talked about Chromebooks, and I'm going to read his quote directly, just because I think it needs to be read. Filler said, kids who are really into learning and want to learn will have better success. It's not hard to understand why kids aren't engaged in a classroom without applying technology in a way that inspires them. You need to have these cutting-edge learning tools to help kids really achieve their best results. Yet, Chromebooks don't do that. Chromebooks have gotten to the classroom because, frankly, they're a cheap testing tool required testing. If all you want to do is test kids, well, maybe a cheap notebook will do that, but they're not going to succeed. Face value, that's a very bold statement to say that...
You know, and I agree with parts of it, but he doesn't address his device.
No, I mean, it's like... Yes, I mean, if Chromebooks are just used to take a test with, I mean, they may not be as successful as something that maybe sparks a little bit more creativity. It has a lot to do with how the Chromebook is actually used in schools and by the teacher, and like how the buy-in rate from administration and things like that. But to just flat out say that if kids use Chromebooks, they're not going to succeed, that's a very, very bold statement to say. And to be completely honest with you, it doesn't matter what device they have. If the kid doesn't want to learn using the device, he's not going to learn with the device. It doesn't matter the device.
You're right.
I mean, there's a lot more, I think, that Chromebooks can do in classrooms that I think Apple actually realizes or fails to mention. I mean, especially when you have like Android apps now and Linux apps.
Yes.
The Chromebook is becoming a lot more powerful than people give it credit for.
Now, like, one of the things I'd like to see on an Apple, I mean, they tout their Swift language and whatnot, but can you write an iOS app on an iPad?
No, you can't. All you can do is basically
I can write an Android app or a Chrome OS app on a Chromebook.
Yeah, so I just don't know where he's coming off with this arrogance, and that's really the only word that I got for it, this arrogance that if you don't get Apple products, your kids are not going to succeed. I mean, that's essentially what I got from what he said. I mean, yes, I like Apple products better than Chromebooks. I will admit that. I mean, that's no lie here on the show that I like the Apple stuff better than the Chromebooks. But they also haven't updated, what is it that they use for their assignments and things like that.
With the Apple School Manager?
No, not that. The thing that's on the device.
I have no idea. You're not talking about iTunes U, are you?
Yes, iTunes U. iTunes U has not been updated to take use of iOS 9 features.
Well, they got to break it up into 12 different apps first.
So, I mean, it's like, I don't know why I just, that. I mean, I guess that's why I forgot about it, because it's such a forgettable app. It's like people that want to rely on Apple stuff that use things like that, they haven't even, it doesn't even take advantage of things that got introduced in iOS 9. So where does Phil Schiller get the whatever to make these statements? I don't know. It's just very, very disheartening that he would say stuff like that. But he did apparently try to counteract the response that he got by saying and he put on Twitter, and I have a link to that in the show note too. It says, "Every child has the ability to succeed. Helping them to do that has always been our mission. In the full conversation with CNET, we discuss giving kids and teachers the content, curriculum, tools they need to learn, explore, and grow, not just to take a test." I mean, so...
Now, and like I said, I will agree 100% with his statement, though. If you want to take a test, I mean, who cares what device you give them?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter. If that's the main purpose of your technology inside of a classroom is to take a test, then yeah, Chromebook, it's a lot more cost-effective and more beneficial having the keyboard built in and things like that than an iPad is. Or a lot more cost-effective than putting MacBook Airs in classrooms or any other kind of Mac laptop. But
especially when they're going to be abandoned.
So, I mean, it has a lot to do with how the device is actually used in the classroom. And I think especially with the Android apps, there's a lot that they can do on the Chromebook that maybe the I will say this, though. I'm not sure that... I don't see Google EDU out touting a lot of their stuff like I see Apple EDU out doing. Apple EDU in Texas, at least, is actually putting on like workshops all throughout the state after every release of software and hardware to kind of tout new features for education and how to implement things in classrooms and do new things. I guess because Chrome OS updates so much, you don't really get that. You don't really get that from Google. I mean, they show up at conferences and things and show off big things like the Google Daydream and Google Expeditions and things like that. But they're not really touting a whole lot of, like, here's what we can do to make your classroom life a lot better, like I see doing.
One of the programs Google does have going right now, and they've contacted me about it, and it's not a bad program. It's called G Suite Fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it lets the – it says – here, I'll just read the email. Let me pull it up. It says, "Reaching out from Google for Education will let you know about a free program available to help teachers better understand Google for Education in the classrooms and get their level – 1 educator certification." So what they're doing is they're giving all these training and stuff for your teachers to do in the professional development for it for free, and then reimbursing the cost of the test.
Oh, well, that's good.
So, I mean, they're not very vocal and public about it, but they reach out to the console admins about it.
Yeah. I wonder how I hadn't gotten that email. That's interesting.
I don't know.
I mean, that's something that, like, I would even like to do. To go get like that Google whatever certification thing. I mean,
yeah, and they have that edu.google.com site that they have all sorts of stuff on there.
But yeah, so I mean, it just seems like, and I could be completely wrong just because I'm blinded towards Google a lot of times. But I just see Apple EDU a lot more public than I do Google EDU. I mean, Apple EDU is not doing events like I'm going to next week at a school. A little bit away to basically tout off all the latest stuff and how it can relate to education. I mean, Google's not doing things like that. So, I mean, I don't know.
I don't really think they have to, though. I mean, they kind of won this battle.
Yeah,
they won this war.
I think deep down, I think that's probably the problem with Phil Schiller. He realizes he lost the classroom is what it boils down to.
And if we go back, Apple lost it for a second time.
Yeah, that's true, especially after, because they had education. I mean, it was theirs.
And then, And Microsoft took it.
Yep. And now Google's coming in and taking it. But like I said, I think it really, I think success in the classroom with any device depends on how it's being used. I mean, it can't just be a testing device. I mean, you could just, you could say the same, everything that he was saying about the Chromebooks in that statement can be said about an iPad.
It can be said about any device you've been in a classroom.
I mean, so it was just very, it was just very bold for him to say that, to say that
it was.
They're not going to succeed if they have a Chromebook and not an iPad. Because that's what I took out of it.
No, that's what I read into it as well. So, I mean, yeah, it's but, yeah, Google does have a lot of stuff. They don't really publicly do anything about it. But they do have, like, one of the things I'm looking here on EDU right now, because, you know what, it's been a while since I've been to this site, is they have all sorts of new curriculum for CS First for 4th through 8th grade computer science. They have an AI curriculum now. They have all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, that's good. I need to check that out. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Now, we mentioned earlier at the top of the show that it hasn't been a good week for technology in schools in our area. We actually had another district here in our area get hit by the ransomware. It's public knowledge, so we're not really going to be talking about anything we shouldn't really talk about. It's been on the news. I'll have links to that in the show notes.
Still won't mention any names on the show, though.
Yeah. But apparently they got it infiltrated their system via an email, phishing attempts. And so it basically spread from there. They are saying on the news that no data has been compromised. And technically that's true because it's all encrypted. Nobody can read it.
I mean, no, this is true. Nobody's reading it.
Nobody's reading it. So nothing has been, I don't think any student information or employee faculty information has been taken because it's all been encrypted. It's one of those things where it's encrypted. They want money. Obviously they're probably not going to pay it. But I don't know how that's all going to shake out because I don't know how much they're asking for in either amount. They're probably not trustworthy enough to send that much money to and put their blind faith in. They'll actually send them the password to get into their encrypted data.
Who even knows if there's anyone to send it to at this point?
Yeah,
this could just be a background radiation from the internet.
Yeah. That's what needs to happen. Like, the whole internet needs to shut off for, 2 days so that all that cruft can just die. You know? All that extra cruft. So this is, the second big... Actually, it may be, the third one in our area that's gotten hit. And so we were going to talk about some other things today, but I just kind of wanted to mention this because it's a good time. And we actually use it as a good time to remind our staff, which we have been doing. We've been doing these lunch and learns every month. And this last lunch and learn, we went through a phishing quiz, which is actually made by Google. So it used Gmail as examples of things you can look for in phishing emails. And so we've actually been doing this. And so this was just a nice reminder. We use this as basically, I wouldn't necessarily say a nice reminder. I'm sorry, that's not the right words. It's an unfortunate event that we were able to use as a learning experience for our people. We sent them out a nice reminder. Oh, there's the nice reminder again. We sent them out a reminder about things to look for in emails, reminded them about the things we went over in the lunch and learn, and basically told them, if you have any problems, just forward us the email and we'll take a look at it and tell you if it's safe or not. And I tell people all the time, it's yes, that seems stupid. It looks like a bunch of added unwanted work for myself, but that work will save me headache in the long run. If you send me those questionable emails, I'll tell you yay or nay. It's worth it to me to get those as opposed to them clicking on something willy-nilly to do. And then apparently there was a technology meeting at the service center and some things were talked about some things that you could do to further protect your network. And we'll just mention a few of those. Obviously, make sure you do not have RDP access open to the internet for whatever reason.
445's got a lot of problems.
Use a VPN and get in that way if you absolutely need to. In fact, don't open up anything that you don't need open to the internet, period. I remember my my boss texted me. She says, "Do we have RDP open?" And I was like, I literally responded, "Hell no," because yes. That is like, no, that is definitely we're not doing that, because that is like one of the between email phishing and that's the main ways that it gets in.
And it's not good.
No, and I think the only things that I literally have open is like web access to certain applications, like the HVAC system, which with that Palo Alto Dumo firewall that I've been getting, I can actually tell that there's something in Colombia trying to hit that web interface of that.
Isn't that fun?
And so I'm kind of looking forward to getting some kind of a firewall that I can actually shut down whole countries.
So I shut down countries on mine right now.
So I think that would be
even internally
very, very beneficial to be able to do. But yeah, so just but the main thing is, and so the high school principal actually asked me today, he says, and he was kind of joking. He was like, "So do you have us all protected from this kind of stuff?" I said, "Look," I said, "there's only so much I can do. I can't protect you from stupid." Because a lot of this has to do with mistakes that humans make is how this stuff gets in. There's a lot that falls on the technology staff and the policies in place. For instance, don't give your users local admin rights to their computers unless they absolutely have to have them. For instance, our ag shop teacher out there, I have to give him admin rights to the laptop that he uses for his CNC machine, because it has to have admin rights to run, which I think is stupid, but that's just the way it's coded. It has to happen. So unless a teacher has to have admin rights, there's really no reason to give them admin rights.
And I agree with
that. Use tools like System Center and Chocolaty to push out software. I mean, they don't need to, and you'll get a lot of cut out of garbage installed on your computers that don't need to be there, because they'll have to go through you to get something installed. So I mean, there's just and it's just so it, a lot of it has to do with user education, because people make mistakes. I get it, but some of these come from dumb mistakes. I mean. At the lunch and learn, the main thing we taught our people, it's like if you walk away with anything, it's hover before you click.
Yes.
Just look at what the URL is going to before you click on it, because that's what's going to get you. You're going to click on something, and you're going to give somebody your password because you think it's Google, and it's not Google. Because those phishing emails are getting very well done. They're looking more and more legit.
Especially since they opened up Unicode. As far as for domain registration, they actually have a lot of letters and stuff that are not English letters that look like the English letters, like some of the Greek letters. So they're looking like they're going to actual domains, but they're not.
Yeah. And not only that, it's like just training your people and teaching them like what the actual domain they're going to is. It's like, I tell them, it's like, you have to look for the slash. Like, look what's right before the slash. That's where it's actually going to. Because I can make a website that's google.twistofmat.com all day long. That's easy to do with DNS. I mean, that's easy. It's like, and if that's the only thing you're looking at, is you make this very long, cumbersome subdomain that starts with google.account.security or whatever. I mean, sure, at first glance, that may seem legit, but it's like you got to look for that slash and see rights before it. And a lot of times it's probably going to end with .ru or .cn.
In fact, I block North Korea, and I block Russia, and I block I have to go look. I block another country just right off the top. I was like, I don't have any need for anything ever there.
Venezuela.
Well, never mind. I'll be nice.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's like there's nothing that we should be accessing over there, and there's nothing they need from us. So, I mean, and it's like you don't want to be hateful to these countries, but I mean, it's just the truth.
You got a history.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the hacking comes from those kinds of countries because their cybersecurity laws are a lot less strict than ours, or they just know how to get away with it a lot better than we do. One or the other. But yeah, so apparently the FBI, the CIA, the Homeland Security, they're all working towards getting this school district back up and going. But, you know, this was a pretty big school, and when you get hit this bad, unless you can contain it, like with routing and things like that, unless you can contain it, you're basically re-imaging everything, because it's all
infected. I'm game for.
Just reimage it all.
I'm sorry, I just can't trust some of it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and so that's a lot of work for staffs, of IT staffs, and the fact that we just mentioned earlier about using Phil Schiller's comment about using technology in schools, and now this school actually has no technology at all because they basically disconnected everything. Whoops. So, I mean, but, you know, I was taught and I learned just fine without a Chromebook. some of our classrooms didn't have projectors. I mean, I had a teacher that she had used overheads with the transparencies, and we did fine. We were successful. So, I mean, there's other ways that you can teach and do things without technology. It's possible. Granted, technology makes it more engaging and a little bit easier in some instances, but you can do it without it. It was done before.
Yep, it has been, and it will be again.
Yeah, but, yeah, so it's just crazy that it's like, it's putting, I don't know if your staff questioned you about it a lot, but I got a lot of questions about it. Because when it gets closer to home, people care more about it. I mean, if it was to happen in some other state far off or even farther away in Texas, they probably wouldn't have cared. It probably wouldn't have made our news. But when it gets close to home, that's when people start caring. And you just got to use it as education opportunities to train your people and to say, hey, look, this is, I mean, I was talking to my boss about, she wanted to send the email out. I was like, look, just put in the email what happened. I mean, because I said, it's no secret. They put it on Twitter. When they put it on Twitter, it's okay to tell people about it. So it's like, tell them what happened. It's like, because the district in our area got hit, we want you to be aware of these certain things. Take this as a learning opportunity. I mean, just flat out say what happened. It came in with an email. They clicked on something they weren't supposed to click on, and boom, everything's gone. It's plain and simple. So help us protect you.
Help us help you.
That's right. I mean, it's like, and she put in the email that it's like, and it's really true. They are literally the first line of defense to protecting our networks and our data here in the school, because it's only as strong as your weakest link. I know that's kind of a cliche statement to say, but it really is true. I mean, you can have the strongest firewalls and the most extensive systems, but if you got one person with a little bit more access than what they really need to have, clicking on something they really shouldn't click on, you're pretty much, you can get toast pretty easy. Now, you, on the other hand, actually have some other things in place to kind of stop the things from happening, using AppLocker and stuff, but...
Yeah, I even restrict a script execution with AppLocker, so the only batch files can run. Batch files, VBS files, and PowerShell scripts can only be ran from specific locations by specific people.
So with AppLocker, the way I understand AppLocker is you block applications by signatures, right?
You can block it by signature, you can block it by certificate, you can block it by location, you can block it by hash. So you can block it by type. So I'm like I was saying, as far as script execution, like I have my startup script that we have that executes the our internet filters
stuff, yeah.
Wonderful little tool.
Oh, yeah, the WF logon.
Yeah, which, by the way, if NetSpec, if you're listening, I've got an MSI for that I'm going about to deploy so I can avoid your script.
There you go.
So I have that particular script whitelisted, and I have the script written where it doesn't pull from other locations.
Yeah, but so, like, if it stops applications based on signatures and hashes, like, what happens? How do you have like a database of this stuff, or do you just stop it from running?
Like, I stop it unless it's known.
Okay, so you're basically whitelisting.
It's whitelist.
Okay, so you block all and then whitelist what you want.
Yes,
that's very interesting. I remember you helped me set up something similar to this that basically stopped like executables from running in like the profile folder, like the app data or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I do have that in here as well, as far as my policy.
The only problem with me is that's broke Office installations.
but I whitelist Microsoft's signed packages.
Oh, and so that's how you can get away with that. All right, so yes. I need to turn that policy back on and look into further updating that to whitelist things, because that would... I mean, I haven't, knock on wood, I haven't had a problem really with anything.
Well, let's just say it works so well that I went through and recreated an installer because I could not, for the life of me, get Vigo to verify and run.
It's crazy.
It was simpler. It was easier for me to create a package and sign it and allow my private signing than it was to make theirs work because it was so malformed.
Yeah. So, look, believe it or not, I don't really push out that much software other than, like, testing stuff.
Yeah.
And Chrome and Office and 7-Zip and Notepad++ and things that probably have good signatures and non-malformed installations. So I'll definitely look into that.
One thing you will learn quick is you will find the System Center cache folder and whitelist it.
Whitelist, yeah, absolutely.
that made it miserable for a few days.
So, like, does it stop things from running, period, unless it's whitelisted?
Yes.
So, basically, any application I install on these computers, I have to whitelist?
Well, depending on what you're wanting to install. Now, you can whitelist administrators if you want. You can whitelist certain people to be able to do whatever they want, because it does use full Active Directory credentials. So, I mean, you can whitelist based on, like, you could say, for example, if you were brave enough, you could say domain admins can run whatever the crap they want from wherever they want.
Yeah. I just wonder if I need to, like, plan this over, like, a Thanksgiving. Because
yes, you need to plan it out.
Because I don't want to, because Office,
like,
won't
I was
start.
Joking around with you earlier, is I started really, really restrictive, and I blocked the shell from starting. So
no,
you logged
Explorer.
In, and you got a message saying AppLocker has prevented this application from running. And you're like, well, what is this application? And then you go view the event viewer from remotely because you couldn't get to it there.
It's
and
Explorer.exe.
It was the shell. It was Explorer.exe.
So.
So it does work, and it works really, really well.
So you have to have a list of, like, all the applications that you use, and
not really. Now, if like, as far as running of executables, you can set it to where things that are installed in the program files folders work. So you don't have to do that individually.
Okay, that's
now,
probably
if they were
going to
run. Yeah, and if they were going to run something, say an installer, even as an admin. If that installer wasn't in a whitelisted location, or if that publisher wasn't whitelisted, or if that user didn't have access to run it, yes, it blocks it.
Okay.
You can get as granular as you want, and you can get as draconian as you want.
Well, I mean, considering I have to, like, run as admin and put in my account that runs under my account, if I just whitelist everything where I can install it, I shouldn't have a problem, and then whitelist the program files folder so that they can run it on the computer itself. And then obviously
yes.
Just throw in the Microsoft stuff automatically, and then... maybe the Google
stuff too.
You can
now, even having the whitelist in there for the program files directory, I did have to add some signatures in there, like Texas Instruments. I did have to add them in there so the calculator emulators would work.
Yeah,
I did add Firefox in there. I whitelisted Internet Explorer.
Oh, gross!
Well, you got to think about it. Trident runs as the web rendering on a lot of applications.
Yeah, that's true.
So you have to whitelist it.
It's
our 3D printing software.
Seems like it'll be a lot to set up, but it's worth it in the end.
It is. It is very much so worth it. And because you can deny based on anything or allow based on anything. It's quite wonderful.
Yeah. But
guess what? One of my first rules was in there. Hey, students, anything signed by Siphon Inc. can't run.
There you go. But at the very least, if you don't do anything with AppLocker, at least make sure that you're not giving your people admin rights.
please don't
do that.
At
the very least. That will save a little bit.
And you don't have to have... They don't have to have rights to install drivers. You can go individually allow particular types of drivers to be installed without admin rights. I mean,
yeah,
and there's...
And pretty much, I mean, a lot of things that I've had to... That people have had to install... We're talking like USB headphones... And printers and things like that. Things that people plug in. Windows pretty much just finds the drivers for those on its own. I mean, very rarely do I have to install a printer driver unless it's a really old printer. But I actually have
I have in group policy that they
can install their own printers and it works. They just plug it in and it works.
It does work. Now, I do not allow AppLocker does not allow execution of executables from removable media.
That's probably a good move. Good idea. That keeps them from bringing something, plugging in a USB drive, and installing it.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It can't run a script or an executable from removable media. That includes the CD drive.
Has that come back and bit you?
It did one time. And it was when I needed to install some textbook software. And that was it. And I overrode myself for the those things with a, I have an admin account that I can use that overrides those removable media restrictions.
So what I do is, like, anything that I've ever had to install usually goes into a deploy folder that I keep on my server. So pretty much, could you whitelist that deploy folder? So basically, yeah, says use, anything that's use, from this location, install it.
Yeah, and you can use search query things. So, like, you can put a star in there. Like, say you wanted to whitelist every server that started with SRV-W19. You could put SRV-W19 star.
So,
and they would allow all servers that begin with that name to be a trusted location.
So I could basically install anything from my deploy folder without any problems.
Yeah.
And the you could probably get away from the system center cache problem by clicking the checkbox that doesn't say cache it to the server computer locally.
Or just allow your system center account to be able to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll have to look into that. I mean, it may be a bit of a headache, but I think it'd probably be worth it in the end.
It was a headache. It was a headache for about 3 days, and that was just while I figured out those things that, well, this is actually what we're needing. But you know what? I hadn't had the first problem since that first week.
I know the lady who has the most software on her computer for whatever reason. So what I could probably do is, like, go to her use her computer as the base. If I can make everything on hers work, it'll probably work everywhere.
But the thing is, you probably don't need to make everything on hers work.
True. True.
I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but I don't think any teacher needs the Cricut software loaded on their workstation.
No lie. No lie. I mean, and it's like she has like 14, well, it seems like 14, I'm really over-exaggerating, it's more like three, like, video converters. I was like, just use Handbrake.
They don't need to have any of those on there.
Just use Handbrake. I mean, if you're going to, it's like, just use Handbrake. It's like, it's right there. It'll convert anything to something that's because actually, I have some teachers that use it because they do like a flipped classroom, and so they'll use their document camera and record their lesson. And so whatever format the document camera was saving it in, Google Drive didn't really like it that much for Classroom, and so I have them run it through Handbrake, and it makes it an H.264 file, and that just makes it work great.
Yep.
So, but yeah, so just be leery, do some training.
Be vigilant,
trust but verify, all those cliche sayings, because it's getting closer to home. I mean, it's just happening, and I know a lot of counties. I know we talked about the cybersecurity stuff that we're having to go through at schools, but it's because a lot of, like, government entities are getting hit with this ransomware stuff in the state of Texas, like counties and schools and cities and things like that. A lot of it just keep happening. It's like it gets worse and worse and worse every single day. And you just have to...
Yep, and if you can air gap something, do it.
Exactly. Let's just air gap the whole school.
I thought about air gapping every single one of my servers. And then just having a single WSUS server that has access to the internet.
It might be worth it. I mean, because does the servers really need access to the internet?
Not at all. They have no need, except for, like, my telecommunication server and the SSL proxy server that I use.
So, but yeah, it's getting rough out there. So just educate your people and go from there. But I guess that can be our show for this week. Like I said, we were actually going to talk about, like, sending files, because with this whole cybersecurity information, I was telling our people it's like about sending zip files. And so I was going to kind of talk to you about ways that we can, better ways to send files online without having to
send.firefox.com.
Yeah, exactly. That was like the first thing on my list. But this whole thing with this neighboring school district, which, I mean, it's obviously it's PNG. It's going to be in the show notes, because it's to the news. Since this happened, I just thought it might be a good time as like we used it to remind our people about some things that we can just kind of talk about it here on the show. But for links and show notes for this episode, you can visit educatingtech.net/77. You can send us any questions, comments, or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com. We're on Twitter with @educatingtech, and you can find the link to in our show notes to join our Discord and come hang out with us. Part of the reason why we talked about the Phil Schiller thing today was because it was asked about it in our Discord, so that's really nice. You can follow Chris on Twitter @Feeks, and I am @TwistofMatt. If you like what we're doing, you can leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast on your app of choice to help us grow our audience. And that's it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.